Well, good morning. It's 8 o'clock, Monday morning. Ah, another day.
Where's your enthusiasm? Well, it's definitely Monday.
I'm getting there. It ain't Monday to me. I worked all weekend. We had 400... I left about 6 o'clock last night, yeah. 6:30. We had 403 people through at that time.
It was a beautiful day yesterday.
I mean, it's amazing.
Beautiful day. Every time I walked outside and looked up, you know, you keep getting that feeling of, why aren't I out on the boat?
Yeah, I mean, it was, that's the way I felt this morning. I looked out, it was just perfect out. I mean, absolutely amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's in the mid-60s.
Why?
What?
Why?
What do you mean?
Oh, it's just weather would make up its mind.
Well, it's up to 70 now.
Oh, joy.
Yeah,
it's May. 70. It shouldn't be starting at 60.
I think it should. I'm really enjoying the, you know, the crisp mornings and, you know, low humidity. And the other day, we were talking about it, that high humidity. I was like, wow, you know, it had been so long since I'd spent the day outside. Yeah. I've been in here all the time.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to die.
Light switch weather is what it is. I don't know why one day it's 60 and then the next day it's 90 and 120% humidity that you can cut with a knife.
Well, it's supposed to be low tonight of 62, high tomorrow 90, well, it's supposed 63, to be, 90.
Yeah, it's supposed to be nice. And when you're getting that 60 in the middle of the night, that's your, because of the no humidity, and it's supposed to be like that all week.
Yeah.
And the good winds, 5 to 10 mile an hour winds
all
week. I gotta
tell you, if Robert was here, we'd be doing a pirate ship this week, because perfect nights for doing a pirate ship.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
And but Robert's still in Costa Rica hunting snakes and stuff.
Yeah, more power to him. He's probably going to miss the best fishing that we have in the month of May this coming week.
Well, you've been out. You were out the other night. And what happened? You and Barb and Dave from Luigi's went out?
Yeah, we went out hopefully to go after some cobia and tarpon. We did put, we've got two cobia to the boat. Dave lost his in the middle of the fight. We lost Barb's right at the edge of the boat.
Now, folks, I'm not a suspicious person. Maybe this could be not. But now, when you listen to this, Kale's fish came in the boat.
Right.
Dave's fish was lost, and Barb's fish was lost.
Right.
Conspiracy theory? I'm not sure.
No. Dave, maybe. But no, because if Barb's comes into the boat, it still ends up in my belly.
Okay.
There's no conspiracy there.
I'm still not sure. Hey, Barb, did he mess up your fish when you were bringing your cobia in? Or he did? Okay, so now Barb's telling a whole different story here, my friend.
Of course.
Barb sitting there said, no, this was your fault.
That's my fault, right?
No, because I just listen. I'm not judging, maybe a little.
It's going to be my fault.
Yeah, I was just like, okay, you know, the captain on the boat.
That's the way it works. That's the way it works. You know, she's not seeing the big picture. Why would I intentionally screw up her cobia that ends up in my belly anyways?
Yeah, now, but you already had
can't
one.
Even, we there, can't even...
There's a pile of circumstantial. We could CSI this thing.
Sure.
You know, I'm sorry, but I think we need a forensics team on this one.
No, I most people will count a touched leader as a caught fish.
Only them idiots out there.
And
nobody.
Well, I will count any other fish a touched leader as a caught fish, but not cobia. Cobia only count when they're sitting in the live well.
Okay. All right.
Now, the interesting thing, they're full eggs right now.
Right.
So they're going through a breeding cycle, and they're obviously looking for structure to lay their eggs.
Really?
Right now, all the cobia are being caught mainly around structure. They're being caught near the reef and near the bridges. You're not hearing...
I wonder what structure would have to do with fish eggs.
We
got to look this up. That's going to make me nuts now.
I'd have to look it up with a cobia. I don't know if... what kind of a breeder cobia are. Do they look for structure? Do they attach their egg sacs to something? Do they just let them go? I don't know. I don't think anybody around here has put a whole lot of thought into cobia. Really, the only thought that I put into cobia is recipe-wise.
Yeah, I mean, I know. You're. If it's a cobia, it's lunch.
Yep.
And but yeah, but I was
it's they were eating really, really gentle. Wasn't a whole lot of fight in any of them. We were using very, very heavy tackle. We were out there with shark and tarpin gear, but still not a whole lot.
How did you prepare for this trip?
Barb grabbed 8 dozen shrimp. I had some chum, some cut bait, because it was kind of going to be a shark, tarpon, cobia night, whatever happens. Barb was catching bait while we put some chunked ladyfish out.
Okay. Now,
sitting underneath the bridge, anchored up on the outside of the bridge, Carl had caught some cobia and some tarpon earlier in the day, and the one thing that he had noted was all the fish that ate off the bottom. Nothing hit anything suspended. So
okay,
that's what we
now it's saying out. Here, I went on Wikipedia, and cobia are a pelagic spawner, releasing many tiny 1.2 millimeter buoyant eggs into the water where they become part of the plankton. The eggs float freely with the currents until hatching. The larvae are also considered planktonic and being more or less helpless during the first few weeks. And the male matures in 2 years, the female at 3. Both sexes moderately long-lived, 15 years or more. Breeding activity takes place diurnally, yes. And it has nothing to do with the restroom. And April to September, in large offshore congregations where the female is capable of spawning up to 30 times a season.
Sure.
30 times a season?
And they spawn 2 seasons per year.
So it's, okay.
And now that you're reading that, it's kicking something in my head. Is that why the cow nose rays show up? Where do you see your cow nose rays? They're filter feeders,
yeah,
to an extent.
Yeah.
You see them cruising the surface, and the cobia is giving birth to buoyant eggs.
Well, at least we've cleared up the whole thing. Do they attach their eggs or don't they?
Yeah, and that was the one thing that really surprised me was... Thank you. That was the one thing that really surprised me was that how small their eggs were.
Yeah.
Tiny, tiny little pinhead eggs.
Yeah, they said 1.2 millimeter.
Yeah,
that's itty bitty.
It's tiny. And you would think that a big fish like that would start from a big egg. I mean, I would expect something salmon egg sized.
Right.
But no, they're just little tiny, you know, pinhead eggs, which is kind of amazing considering the size of these fish.
Well, it's one of the most prolific fish, and it grows really quickly.
I mean, they're about the size of spotted sea trout eggs.
Yeah, they're raising them in pens offshore.
Yeah.
They put big pens out, and they're actually keeping them in pens and raising them for food.
Yep.
It's one of the few fish that actually responds well to that.
One of the very few.
Yeah, most fish don't.
Well, they're a real hardy fish. I mean, they've had tagged cobia circumnavigate the globe. So that's,
yeah, they're found virtually all over the world.
Yeah, that's a fish that can take a wide range of temperatures, salinities, you know, stuff like that. So
yeah, I don't
really, really strong fish.
Yeah, it's funny. I know the radiation treatments and the brain and all that have got me a little backwards, but I should have remembered that cobia, and it just makes sense because of the offshore stuff.
Sure.
I mean, they spawn near the surface over the top of reefs. I wonder what it's about, because usually, I mean, you're dead on the money. We see them cruising, circling around reefs and stuff. And I wonder what it is about that, like the bridges. They seem to be spawning down here. Now, I don't think they're actually going to spawn here, because we've had a lot of fresh water come down. The river's up to 3.5 feet, by the way. It went from 1.5 up to 3.5. So we've gained 2 feet of water in the Peace River.
A lot of it's probably food.
Yeah.
You know, the bridges and the reefs are the only places that are, you know, will usually hold food all year round. Whether it be catfish, a lot of whiting around the 41 bridge right now. We all know how much that cobia love that whiting. Small snapper around the bridges also.
Whoa, I was wrong. It's over 4 feet. I just went on fishandfranks.com. I went down to the Peace River section.
Four feet were flowing.
Yeah, it's a little over 4 feet right now. And it looks like it's starting to even off, almost not quite 4.5 feet. But
yeah, well, we got a lot of rain.
That's to raise the water level from 1.5 up to over 4, you know.
Well,
it's almost a 3-foot raise.
That whole Peace River watershed got the rain that we got the other day. I mean, it was one big band that went through across the whole state, so that's kind of to be expected.
Well, the good thing is there's going to be a lot of stuff flowing down the river.
Definitely.
And I don't think it's going to last long enough to mess up the harbor. The west side's going to be real murky for a while, but I think the east side will stay nice and clean.
Yeah, it'll stay clean.
So, anyway, you got on a trip today.
Yeah, going on the client's boat.
So it's an instructional trip today?
No, it's not an instructional trip.
Just going out fishing?
We're going out fishing. Probably mainly shark today.
Gotcha.
He's got friends and family in town and wants to just go have fun. But our subsequent trips from here on out will be educational. He's got a 25-foot Robalo. So he's going to be...
Great boat for middle of the harbor and out into the Gulf.
He wants to concentrate on the middle of the harbor and the Gulf. So we'll be doing a little bit of inshore and offshore 101 with him.
With that boat, you can get out right in front of Gallagher's and that beaches over there.
Yep.
Like right now, that's a great... You could do some good snook fishing with that boat in front of Gallagher's.
And right in Gallagher's Cut. I mean,
I don't know if you get it up in there. That one...
Oh, sure. I've had bigger boats in there.
Yeah, because that, you know, if you can find a parking spot, you know.
That's the tough one with snook season.
Get in there with a 25-foot boat and then all of a sudden go, oh, no place to stop.
Yeah, exactly.
That'd be a bugger.
Yeah, and that's the other thing that people need to start watching for is the snook piling up. Everybody's going to run out to the passes because snook breed in sandy passes with high current.
Right.
Gallagher's Cut is a sandy pass with high current.
And there's enough salt there.
Bull Bay.
Now, one good thing about this rain is this is right when snook are starting to spawn.
Yeah.
And this fresh water coming down the harbor, if it waited 2 weeks or 3 weeks, it would have killed the vast majority of the snook eggs.
Yes.
But as it is now, it should push those snook out to the salt water where they belong.
Yep.
And the eggs, most eggs, should be viable. We should have another great hatch this year.
We should. And those of you that don't feel like running all the way out to our, you know, border passes, keep in mind there's plenty of sandy passes with high current here inside the harbor. You've got the mouth of Ponce Park. You've got Alligator Creek. You've got Pirate Harbor. You've got Burnt Store. All of those canals are sandy passes with high current. Those snook are going to stack up in there to breed, too. They do it every year.
Well, you know, I agree with you. There's a lot of fish that don't want to migrate that extra 10, 15 miles out there. And they hit a certain level of salt and they say, okay, this is good. I'll stay right here.
Yep. And it's frustrating to fish at Ponce from shore and to look across the canal and see those 100 snook laying on the other bank that won't eat anything you throw at them.
No, they're not going to touch anything. You know, you get there before daylight, right as the park opens.
Yep.
It opens from dawn to dusk. If you're there right when they open the gates, get in there and get a few casts in.
Yep.
Rattle Trap's great bait for that early morning. And it's usually some type of green has been the best color, whether it's chartreuse, dark green, light green.
Yep.
Get something with some chartreuse on it.
Your 17 MRs, your 19 MRs,
speaking,
all going to work well.
Have you tried, you know, you've fished our new Rattle Trap, the Fish and Frank's Rattle Trap?
Yeah, I haven't tried our new colors yet.
Yeah, we got the white lady and, you know,
got the white one and the green silver and green. Both, I think, are going to be real productive lures. I know we had one of our customers buy one to try underneath his snook light, which I think that's where that white lady is really going to pay off. Is underneath the lights.
I'm almost thinking, I think you're right, but the next one we're going to come out with, we got to make the one size smaller.
Definitely.
A little bit smaller.
Definitely a little smaller.
Because this is a good size for general fishing, but if you're going to get to those snook and stuff like that, we got to come out with a smaller one.
And I think
I just got to come up with a little more money to buy smaller ones.
I think another progression color-wise, I mean, it should be pinfish. Something that's a pinfish color because
I'm thinking of that bleeding shad.
Those rattle traps have got a pinfish shape to
them. Yeah, that bleeding shad one. I mean, that thing has been a killer for as long as I've been throwing rattle traps. And I think just take their classic already color and just make it into the new type.
Yeah, yep. And I think we should probably stay on them to produce a gold, orange, and black. You know, just for upriver and when the water gets real murky, because...
I don't know about upriver, because these are good up to 3 feet of water. Once you get past 3 feet of water with these are not that great a lure.
No, but still go good back to throw the standard. Underneath the docks. They still work well underneath the docks.
Yeah, I'm almost thinking, because like the docks up on the river, they got a lot of water under them.
I almost
think you'd be better off with a standard rattle trap than one of our new ones.
Yeah, on your deeper docks, absolutely. Absolutely.
But I like them for back on the flats and those shallow water. That's what we created them for, was that, you know, 1 to 3 feet of
the
water.
The south side of the river.
Now, that would be good on the Punta Gorda side.
Right, on the Punta Gorda side, that's the side.
You're hitting the nail on the head. I forgot all about that.
On the other side, the Charlotte Harbor side, that's where you need to be.
You're right. I'm wrong. Okay. You know, I get it. I was wrong. I screwed it all up. And I shouldn't be screwing it up. I should be, you know, Fish and Frank, like the guru fish guy.
Yep.
But, no, you're right. That would be perfect over there, because there's so many reds and snook on that Punta Gorda side over there.
Lots.
And they're all shallow docks. Yep. I mean, you got very 1 to 3 feet of water under them if you're lucky.
Be careful getting over there.
Yeah, it's tough to get to. But anyway, going back, you're heading out today, going to the holes, going to work the deep holes in the harbor, trying to find some sharks.
Yep.
What's the bait of choice right now?
Anything that you can get, really. I've had my best luck so far on ladyfish, and they're preferring fresh ladyfish.
Oh, yeah. Well, and everything fresh is better
fresh
than frozen.
Ladyfish are kind of hard to find right now.
Yeah, get over on the east side along that sandbar. There's been a few, but I would be trolling them.
There's been a few. I've got one spot that it seems that I'm the only person that can catch ladyfish in, because I've sent several people to it. And they come back empty-handed with that deep trough right in front of Redfish Key on the east side. There's usually a glob of them in there.
Yeah, but it's all about working the, because you're using a 17MR to catch
them. Using a 17MR.
So if it's getting that start-stop, a lot of movement with very little forward motion.
Yeah.
And once you get the technique, it's absolutely deadly. But it is a tough lure to use. You could do the storm if we had any left. Theoretically, they'll be in today or tomorrow.
Yeah, the storm
would probably be the one. If you're not really, really good with the 17MR, try the storm.
Yeah. And our new rattle trap is working well, too.
Well, I hope so. I got to keep thinking about that, boosting her, you know.
Yeah, but it is working.
It is a Fish and Frank's exclusive, so, you know, I guess I should be promoting it better.
But you should start seeing some...
Oh, speaking of Fish and Frank's exclusive, how's the rods working out?
The rods are phenomenal.
Yeah?
I love those rods. And I'm coming from, personally, a Star Seagis.
Right.
And I like the castability of your rods a little better.
I think the Seagis is lighter and nicer, and it's definitely a much more beautiful rod. Well, ours are more beautiful. We have the best colors in the world. But the Seagis, if I was going to throw lures all day, I might still stay with some type of Seagis because of the weight difference. It's about an ounce.
If I'm throwing lures all day, I grab one of the Fish and Frank's kids rods.
Yeah, that is the best one.
It's
if I'm going to throw against the mangroves, I want that early angler
tough.
Black one.
Yeah, it's tough.
And you can turn it upside down and skip it underneath the trees.
Yeah, and that's why I like it.
I hated it when I was in the Everglades. I love the fishing. I mean, it was a great trip with Josh. It was absolutely amazing. We caught all these fish. The one thing I was hating, if I would have been an hour closer, I would have came back, got that Fish and Frank's early angler rod, and went back. And when I go down, that's all I'm taking. I'm not taking another rod with us. Because you're making casts that are anywhere from 8, 10 foot to 30 to 50 feet, and that's the best rod in the world for that.
Yeah, and I cast that. It's a goofy way of casting that I learned from you years ago. That weird backhand, underhand cast, and you need a short rod to do that, or you're hitting the water.
Yep.
And that is the perfect rod to do that with.
Skips.
Yeah,
it really does.
20 sized reels on it.
20, 25 is good.
Yeah.
You could get away with like a 3,000 Stratic, but a 2,500 on the pen would be as big as you want to go.
The 2,500 Symmetry I have on one. I've got an old Boca 20 on another one.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've got a Smoke 25 on one.
Smoke's coming back a little bit.
Yeah.
A lot of people going back to the smoke right now. I've swapped out quite a few reels in the last week, and almost every one of them said, give me the smoke. I was kind of surprised.
Yeah.
It had kind of faded for a while. And
it's a good, lightweight, strong reel.
Yeah, it's a pretty decent rig.
Yeah, and when it comes to reels like that, I mean, they are expensive, but it's cheap, light, strong. Pick two.
Right.
You're not getting all three.
I guess we're going to get back to the fishing. I was interrupting. You were talking about jacks over there on the east side. What's up with the jacks?
There's been a lot of jacks over there on the east side. The problem is, I haven't found a shark willing to eat one yet, be it live, dead, whole, chunked.
Which is unusual. It's usually one of the best baits there is.
Blue runners, if you can get them over there, are working well. Spanish mackerel are working well, of course. But I haven't tried. I did try frozen mullet. That worked where I expected it to, more towards Boca Grande Pass. They're not eating them up here in the middle of the harbor. They're preferring the ladyfish.
Could be. I mean, we've been selling a ton of mullet, and maybe they're heading out with it. Any last thoughts for today? We're going to have to wrap this up. You've got to go to your charter
today
here in a few minutes.
Today is going to be a beautiful day. We're not having a lot of wind until later this afternoon.
When the sea breeze kicks up.
Yeah, it 10 to 15 this afternoon, 5 to 10 this morning. If you're not out there, if you're kicking it around, now's the time to get out there.
Got a good incoming tide after lunch.
Good incoming tide after lunch. Work the bridges for the cobia.
Early in the day, this isn't a day to be out early because the tide's going to be real slow until about 12:30. Yeah. After 12:30, that tide's going to pick up and it's going to start moving and the fish will light up.
Yeah.
So
get out there and catch your bait now.
Yeah, I wouldn't be in a big hurry to get out there. I'd relax, have a breakfast, brunch, you know, even lunch, and get out on the water.
Yep.
That last part of today is going to be your best moving water.
If you do head out now, this is the good time to pick up your bait. You know, a good slow drift across the east side with that light wind. Go get some ladyfish, some Spanish mackerel.
Keep in mind, you cannot cut a Spanish mackerel into pieces. It has to be used whole. It has a size limit on it. You cannot do that to a Spanish mackerel any more than you can do it to a snook or a trout or anything else.
Right. Stop the bridge. Pick up some whiting. Put them back down. Even the small catfish. The two cobia that we caught on my rod, me and Barb, were both on a catfish tail.
There you go.
So small, hardhead catfish, cut them off behind his dorsal fin, set it on the bottom and wait. They're eating very, very gently, which I thought was really weird for a cobia. Usually they grab it and haul, but these things wouldn't even set off the clicker. They were eating like a catfish.
Really?
If they felt any tension, if they felt the clicker, they were spitting it. You had to get to the rod immediately, get that clicker off, get it. And if you're using a spinning reel, open that bail. Do not let them feel any tension.
Take a bait runner and back it all the way off.
Even that seemed to be too much tension. I mean, the only reason that we could finally get them, you know, hooked was I would tell Dave, open that bail, let that line go between your fingers. You feel a bump, you let go. And they were eating like a catfish. You know, if catfish grabs something too big, he runs, he stops. He eats. He runs, he stops, he eats. He runs, he stops, he eats as he's choking that thing down.
Huh.
That's exactly the way they were eating, just like a big sail cat.
Wow, that's weird.
It could be a product of the breeding.
Yeah, I guess, you know.
Because they didn't fight. You know, even a 35-inch cobia should put up a fight.
A good fight,
and
yeah.
This was pretty much just winch them to the boat.
So they're all full of eggs and not really wanting to battle so much.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
Captain, makes them easier to put in a live one.
Yeah, Captain Kale across from me in the chair. Any last thoughts for the day?
Not really. Keep an eye on those winds. 10 to 15 out of the in the afternoon could easily turn to 15, 20. So today wouldn't be the good day to run way offshore.
Okay. Well, this is Fishing Frank and Captain Kale. Like I say, watch out for the afternoon sea breeze. It's going to get a little bumpy, but it should be okay, unless you're in a 12-foot John boat.
And yep.
You know, other than that, you should be fine. A lot of black drum back in PGI. Good cobia fishing at the bridge, down by the reef, down by Pirate Harbor. a lot of cobia around, and great time to be out there fishing.
Yeah, this is a year to put in the books for cobia so far.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Cale. And like I say, this is Fishing Frank and Radio Fishing, and we'll see you guys on the next one. Thanks for listening, y'all. Bye-bye.